It's a glass ceiling. Glass ceiling. On hard facts. Hard facts.
Lagos, I'm Sandra Ezekwesili. You've just heard the business update. It's a Wednesday, so you know it's time for the glass ceiling. It's currently 5 minutes past 4 o'clock. How was the raid on Women Court battle won? How was the raid on women court battle won? 2 years ago, authorities in Abuja conducted a massive raid that targeted innocent women going about their business. They were targeted because they were found on the street at night or in hotels or in restaurants, supermarkets even. Who conducted the raids? It was the Abuja Environmental Protection Board, AEPB. And they had help from the police and civil defense and other law enforcement agencies. And in the course of these raids, officers of these agencies violated the rights of numerous women. They detained them falsely. They denied them access to lawyers and visitors. They kept them in inhumane conditions. They abused some of them physically, verbally, and sexually. The women are now free, and many of them have had their day in court. And in one of those cases, the Federal High Court in Abuja has now said that these women's rights were violated and has ordered the guilty agencies to compensate them. The court also said that it was illegal to take action against Nigerians on the basis of their gender. And so today on The Glass Ceiling, let's talk about this victory for women's rights with some of the people who helped make it happen, who had a front row seat. My first guest is a human rights activist and filmmaker. She's the co-founder of Dorothy Njemanze Foundation. I hope she's joined us already. Dorothy Njemanze, hopefully she joins us eventually. My second guest is a digital, gender, media and human rights lawyer, also managing partner of MON Legal and one of the senior counsels on this case. Her name is Mojiraya Ogunlana Nkanga. Welcome to The Glass Ceiling. I hope I pronounced your names correctly, Mojiraya. Did I murder your name?
My name is actually Mojiraya Ogunlana Nkanga.
Nkanga.
So the G is silent.
Uh-huh. Yes, okay.
Nkanga.
Okay. All right. Welcome to The Glass Ceiling.
<you. laughs>
And then we have the director, Legal of Lawyers Alert, a human rights organization. His name is Bamidele Jacobs. Welcome to The Glass Ceiling, Bamidele.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be part of this.
Yes. Lagos, want to hear from you as well. Don't forget we're streaming live on Facebook and on YouTube so you can watch our guests as they talk to you about how they won this victory for these women. Now, I've given a summary of sorts, but Mojiraya, I want you to bring Lagos up to speed. Help me do that. Bring Lagos up to speed. What exactly happened in Abuja in May 2019, Mojiraya?
Okay, so April 26th, a group of law enforcement agents called themselves, we found out that they call themselves the task force of the FCT. So we had the Nigerian police, we had the Nigerian civil defense, and of course, AEPB, that's the Abuja Environmental Protection Board. And these men, of course, we had some other allegations, but we couldn't put them on the application because we didn't have evidence to back them up. Because some other agencies were mentioned by the women, but because we didn't have evidence, so we couldn't do that, couldn't put them on the application. So these men, led by a particular woman who works for the Abuja Environmental Protection Board, went on a raid this fateful evening, entered into clubs, on the road, on the streets, but majorly clubs. And of course, we heard about apartments, which have been known for hotel businesses. So they enter these places, walk up to a lady or any lady there and say, please follow me. And then the lady's like, why should I follow you? And then some hefty looking guys walk up with, you know, into the same space. And, you know, because you don't know what is really happening, now they put you into a confused situation, an unknown situation. So you are thinking about your defense, as well as thinking about not being unwise, not being foolish. So immediately they are just telling, follow us, follow, and then immediately they go out there, they find a boss, and then they started picking women like that. And then, of course, there was a story of a lady who, of course, backed out and didn't want to prosecute, who she was there, she was at a club with her husband, and her husband got up to use the restroom. Before he got back, they had picked his wife and told her to walk into the bus. Now, while she was on her way, he got back to his seat and was like, where is my wife? And then they were, this Abuja people, they have come, or they picked her up. And then he went outside. So they went through a humiliating circumstance in that. Now, what we found out really were the healthy-looking guys were really actually touts. You know, we found ourselves, even as I've discovered on Abuja roads, you see some guys calling themselves AEPB officials, and you see their mannerism, the way they talk. They just wear the same T-shirt to just show that, oh, yes, we are AEPB officials. But really, to me, they look like touts. They rush around, run after orcas on the road. You know, I could understand the idea of who they were when those women were expressing themselves and recounting their ordeal. So these guys all wearing these yellow the reflective jackets, and they come in and then, you know, pick them up. So this wife here was picked up, and then the husband comes and says, you picked my wife, let me have. And they say, what do you have? What proof do you have to say this is your wife?
I'm sorry.
He had to bring out his wallet to show them, oh, this is my picture. And then they started insulting them, ashewo, prostitutes, what are you looking for at night? And then that really got me thinking, is there a law that says you cannot go out at night? Is there a law that says, I just feel like going out at night because I've had a stressful day, maybe a mentally stressful day, and then I decided, okay, let me just go to a club and then chill and then take a drink. So I'm seeing a situation where I am seeing a dangerous precedent. Because after that Abuja raid, I also found out later they continued, just that it didn't gain the kind of publicity that the Abuja raid got. Hmm. They continued this raid on the streets of Gwaripa.
Hmm.
Now, it got me really worried because it seemed that the federal Capital Territory government cannot separate its functions as a constitutionally constituted government from a religious government. Because at some events afterwards, where we saw this Ajia who led that raid, who started speaking, we had her on video where she said, how can a woman go out at night? And then you are taking you are wearing this skimpy dress. So it became a morality issue. And so when something becomes a morality issue, it is a religious issue in Nigeria. That's how it is in Nigeria. So she kept saying all these things. And then it was very baffling because a lot of these girls were taken into a particular, they were jailed. Then after being jailed, they would pick them up again, maybe from Gwaripa police station, then take them to Utako police station, another district. And then they kept doing that until they put them in the Utako. And then there were over 70 women that were picked that day. Now, the only men that were successfully picked that day were bouncers from a particular club who stood against the law enforcement agencies walking into the bar, into the club.
Mm.
They stood, and then because of that anger, they
carried the bouncers. Men
picked the speakers and destroyed them, and then picked the bouncers as well. So the bouncers were, not, maybe in an hour's time, they were already being bailed. Now they asked all these women to start bailing themselves, and then they ask you, they had that experience. Some were able to pay themselves as low as 3,000 naira. Some women didn't even have the opportunity of picking their bags or purses from the club because it was just a sudden situation. You are not told to pick anything. Just say, come with me, follow me. And that was the instruction. You get into the police station, drop your phone. So they were not even allowed to have communications with people out there to call families until some of them were able to express themselves. I have somebody who will come to bail me. Okay, that happened and some people were able to bail themselves. Then we also had information where they had said, if you don't have money, of course, I don't have had evidence to back this up, but people had some ladies had expressed that. If you don't have money, okay, let's go behind this particular building. So they have sex with them and then they can go. And so I was able to believe this particular circumstance because we are presently in court a case that is as similar to that circumstance where a lady was raped by policemen because she did not have 3,000 naira to bail her. And then we have an eyewitness who is also ready to testify in court to that effect. So you have seen a situation where the law enforcement agencies, and then they write it boldly on the in police stations. The police is your friend, and then exactly they are the opposite of what they claim to be. And so this was the brutal situation that these women went through in the hands of people who should ordinarily protect them. And this was not the case. And not only were they abused physically, you saw there was even a case of a woman who was menstruating and no one could give her a sanitary towel to use. And so they left her in a room where she was bleeding on the floor or just there around. And then it was, I know you're a woman. And so imagine what it is. When you're going through that monthly situation, you are generally irritated. Even if you are living in paradise, you are generally irritated. And then being forced into a particular jail center, especially a place that is unkempt, that is dirty and of course smelly, and then you have to go through that. So that also goes into the mental, emotional, psychological issues of what this Abuja raid stood for. And then we had this policeman who, of course, he didn't even present any defense before the court. And then he was really very, he was critical to the main, to all the situation, to every person's encounter. This was the same man who was willing to, you know, beat a woman while there because she had the right to express herself. Now, why are we being kept here? You know, beat her and all that. His name was mentioned across board, you know? And so this just tells you the kind of situation that we have found ourselves. So even the IGP failed to present a defense before the court. So, you know, it's very sad that we have a federal government and that cannot bear its weight on its Nigerian, on its police, on its the law enforcement agencies. Because if each and every one of these agencies, they are aware of the constitutional rights of every human being, every Nigerian citizen has a right to move at any point in time, unless a curfew has been declared, which was not in the case in this circumstance. Every Nigerian has a right to associate at any point in time with anybody, so long as it is a lawful association. And in this circumstance, it was a lawful association. They were not carrying out any criminal act. They were carrying out their rights as Nigerians to be in public at every point, every hour that they want to be out there. And so they have the right to even associate, and then you have told them they cannot associate, and then you have labeled them prostitutes. And I'm so glad that Dorothy is on this call, because Dorothy, a celebrity in her own right, could go through the damaging, situation that we have just described, and then they even, you know, add the guts to even call someone like Dorothy a prostitute. So it means that if Mujirayo decides to go out at 3 a.m., which of course I really do love, because you see everywhere is quiet and you can think. So imagine I don't want to read in my house and I decide, I've done it before, drove to an open space where I knew people were still, people still visited all through like 24 hours joint. I just drove that tree and then just lay down in my car. I did it. I left my house. I was there till like from 12 a.m. to like 3:34 a.m.
And they could have picked you. And they could have picked you up and said that you were a prostitute.
They could have picked me up and said, "Oh, madam, you are. You know, you are."
Now, I want to come to Bamidele for a bit. When these women were in custody, Bamidele, how did the authorities respond to demands that their rights be respected?
Oh, thank you very much. Once again, I'm glad for this opportunity. Now, I did remember vividly that when authorities were actually consulted, agencies were met on the rights of these women. Now, they responded the usual way that we have seen with agencies of government in Nigeria. And that is the usual way of telling you this so-and-so have committed so-and-so offense, and they are still interrogating them, and that after interrogation, they will, I mean, all these things are the usual thing we see. And when you see them, they are not done to actually protect the rights of these individuals. They are, in fact, sometimes, or most times, they are done to even see that thing which they really want to get at, it's given to them in abundance. And that is, now, you see, after making you go through a lot, after making you pass through so much, they see that there is so much pressure on you, it gets to a point where you become desperate. And for any desperate person, you are ready to go the whole hog. I mean, to cooperate in whatever way or they want you to cooperate. And so what we got at the end was a situation where individuals were then being consulted to actually arrange for bail. And arranging for bail in the Nigerian sense, it's not the way it is known all over the world. It is not the way it is known in the standard use of that language. So usually in Nigeria, it requires and it involves paying money, paying through the nose sometimes before you get an individual out of custody. And so when this happened, that was what eventually followed. After allowing some of these women to have passed through a lot, to have been traumatized so much, honestly, some of them spent 2 days, some others up to 3 days, in custody, just for offenses that I can assure you they did not even commit at all. So that was basically the response. The response is, now you go and look for somebody that will come and bail you. Go and arrange for your bail. That was what they told even some of the relatives that visited. And even when the lawyers got there, honestly, the agencies were not ready to cooperate.
How about their rights? Because she just, Mojiraya mentioned quite a number of violations of the rights of these women. We've got 1 minute before we have to take a break. So tell me, Bamidele Jacobs, when you mentioned to the authorities, these women have rights, how about we respect their rights? What was their response at the time?
No, the rights have always been there. And unfortunately, I wouldn't know if it would be correct of me to say that a lot of these individuals are even aware of these rights. When I say individuals, I mean officers of these agencies are very much aware of this right. Because I do not want to believe there is any police officer, for example, who has passed through the necessary trainings that will not be aware of these rights. So they know them. But the question is, are they ready to make this right accessible? Make them accessible to the people? I will tell you that for selfish reasons, the answer to this is capital no. And that is why what you usually witness is a situation where somebody is aware that you have these rights, but is not prepared to freely make these rights available to you.
Bamidele, let's leave it at that. Thank you so much. I will say, Lagos, that we finally have our first guest who's a human rights activist and filmmaker on the show with us. She's a co-founder of Dorothy Njemanze Foundation, and we're going to be talking to her as soon as we come back from this break. You're listening to Hard Facts on 99.3 Nigeria Info. I am Sandra Ezekwesili. The Glass Ceiling happens every Wednesday at 4 o'clock.
99.3 Nigeria Info.
Your number one station for talk. Let's talk.
It's 4:37. I'm Sandra Ezekwesili, and you're listening to The Glass Ceiling on Hard Facts on 99.3 Nigeria Info. And today we're talking about the raid on women in Abuja. 2 years ago, authorities in Abuja conducted a massive raid that targeted innocent women who were going about their business. And eventually, some interested parties took the authorities who were involved in that issue to court. And for some of those women, victory was won. Now, I have some of the activists who did that on the show with me today. A human rights activist, filmmaker, co-founder of Dorothy Njemanze Foundation is here with me while they're on Zoom. Dorothy Njemanze, she joins us on The Glass Ceiling today. We also have a digital, gender, media and human rights lawyer, also a managing partner of MON Legal, and one of the senior counsels on this case, Mojirayo Ogunlana Nkanga. She joins us as well. And then my third guest is a director, legal of Lawyers Alert, a human rights organization, Bamidele Jacobs. And before we went on that break, we had Mojirayo paint us a vivid picture of what went down in April and May 2019. And then Bamidele also spoke with us further about the rights of these women and how they were thoroughly abused while they were in detention. Now, Dorothy joined us before we went on the break, but Dorothy, you wanted to share a few of your thoughts as we went along, yes?
Yes, I did. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, it's always wonderful seeing you.
Yeah.
Okay, so at the time the violations in 2019 happened. Mm-hmm. I am somebody who has been working on these violations since 2011, right? Mm. And so immediately we deployed people to go and look for where these people would be found.
Right.
Once we found them, we tried to get them legal counsel, access to lawyers. They were outrightly denied access to lawyers. And then they were moved to the APB office in Area 3. Then from the APB office in Area 3, they were moved to the old parade ground where they were brought before a magistrate. Hmm. But they were blatantly denied access to lawyers. In fact, while we were there, there was one of the cases where the brother of one of the ladies was shouting. He disrupted the magistrate session and says, my sister was with me last night. I was there when everything happened. And they ignored him, totally ignored him. And the lady said, yes, well, she agrees to whatever charges were brought before her and she agrees to pay a fine. Mm-hmm. And so she was given the thing. It was captured and she eventually spoke to us, you know, talking about why she did what she did, you know. And it was disheartening for me to see somebody's brother trying to prove to the world that that was his blood sister and they were together when all the violations happened. And he didn't know why, you know, they were why she decided to go with the stories of the allegations against her. She said eventually that she had been told that if she did not plead guilty before the court, that they had been threatened that they were going to be sent to prison. Do we have records that anybody who did not plead guilty was sent to prison afterwards? Yes, we do. We do have those records. In fact, there were people who had altercations with the police officer that were in prison for a period of time, and it took quite a while to be able to get them out of prison. And so these violations have been happening on and on and on. And is it a one-off thing? Absolutely not. I'm one person who has been victim of exactly the same thing. In fact, these exact violations made me and three other people to take Nigeria to the ECOWAS court. And that was in 2014. And we got a landmark court judgment in 2017 in the Dorothy Njemanze and three others versus the Federal Republic of Nigeria, where the court made it expressly clear that a woman outside her house at night does not translate to a woman, you know, prostituting. And the court also found Nigeria guilty of sexual and gender-based violence, or promoting sexual and gender-based violence, because Nigeria alleged to be fighting a war against prostitution. Now, the court sought to know whether prostitution could be, you know, committed by oneself, to oneself, within oneself, on oneself, you know, and where it was said that it was not possible. The court wanted to know where the partners in prostitution, you know, where the court identified that prostitution can only happen where there are two willing partners in the said crime, right? But the court was only seeing a war against one gender and not seeing anybody being held accountable on the other gender.
Right.
The reason the Nigerian counsel gave was that it is the women that lure men into prostitution. Well, at the end of the day, damages were awarded against the Federal Republic of Nigeria for these violations. And it's hurt me so badly to see that even when the government had not paid the damages awarded for such a thing, and that was the first time the Maputo Protocol was cited in a court judgment, by the way. So that's what makes it landmark, right?
Right.
And so even after that, there was still a repeat of all of this in 2019.
Tell us what the Maputo Protocol is. Tell us what the Maputo Protocol is.
Oh, well, so there's so many conventions and treaties. It's the I'll get the full thing, the charter of the people, something. Would you help me with that? Well, but I'm mixing it up in my head now.
Oh,
but
we have the lawyers for that. We'll talk to the lawyers about that, yeah.
Yes, we have the CEDAW, the Convention on Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women. That's the international one, right? Then there's the African version of the CEDAW, and that's the Maputo Protocol, you know, the charter something. Okay, so that thing. So, well, at the end of the day,
it's a protocol to the African Charter. So it's more or less like the CEDAW. So it's adopted a lot of, what do I say, the progressive provisions that protect women against gender rights issues.
I see. Okay. So, okay. Go ahead, Dorothy.
That's it. Yeah. So now, having domesticated that, so we're signatory to the CEDAW. We've ratified all of them, you understand, and we've gone ahead in Nigeria to domesticate laws to prove our commitment to the ratification of these conventions and protocols that exist, right?
Right.
And the Violence Against Persons Prohibition Act would be one of such. The Gender and Equal Opportunities Bill would be another version of such, which would be a direct manifestation of that,
right?
Amongst other things, you know. And so we expected that people would have done better. And what hurt the most was the fact that it was the Social Development Secretariat that was supposed to be invested with the responsibility of securing women and girls,
right,
that led the whole thing. And we're hearing people talk about the violations done to them. And then the director of the Social Development Secretariat, specifically at the National Human Rights Commission, on several occasions said she was going to prove that no such thing happened to anybody, no violations happened. Remember that in the Dorothy Njemazi and three others versus Federal Republic of Nigeria case, one of the things that Nigeria was held liable for was the refusal to give us a fair hearing, grant us access to fair hearing.
Right.
And that fair hearing that Nigeria didn't grant us access to was replicated again here. Now, what was the response when this one happened again? I came out, being that I knew how this thing usually happens, I didn't waste time to use the social media to amplify all my findings.
Right.
I was invited by the police for announcing my findings from the people who I saw that pure water sachets were used to rape them at Otako police station. And luckily for me, the civil society turned up with me and refused that the police had an interaction with me privately so that I wouldn't be bullied into silence for anything, right?
Hmm.
The fact that the testimony of females is subjected to, you must meet some people, you must satisfy some people's moral acceptance of you for some reason before you have before you're granted an opportunity to exercise your fundamental human rights,
right.
You know, I found that very, 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 very disturbing.
Mm.
But I didn't regret anything that I did. I went all out to push all facts out because that's what should be done. I learned from my previous engagements with these people what has been happening. And now, I'm happy that we've come to a point where we have gotten some court judgment. You know, but the thing about it for me would be the individuals that orchestrated the use of executive positions to abuse people's powers, all of them should be held accountable for justice to be seen as done, you know, across board.
Let me come to Bamidele now. Bamidele, what exactly did this judgment say? You're muted, Bamidele.
Okay, thank you very much. Basically, four things stand out in this judgment.
Mm-hmm.
One is that the court actually agreed that the rights of these women were actually infringed upon.
Okay.
That's the first one.
Okay.
And that it was unlawful and illegal to do so. That's one.
Okay.
Then the other aspect of the judgment is the one that says the Abuja Environmental Protection Board, which is the AEPB, which is the umbrella organization that brought together this task force,
right,
that carried out these raids, that the board and the task force actually went outside its powers to have gone to effect in the first place the arrest of these women and or detaining them in the first place. So that was also one thing that stands out in that judgment. And also, the court went ahead to award varying degrees of damages. In fact, damages ranging from the sum of 2 million to 4 million were awarded to these women. And the one that is most important is that one that has to do with a perpetual injunction, which restrains the task force or any or security agency from carrying out such an arrest in the future without a valid court order. So to me, if you ask me, that is the most important of all the reliefs that of all the or the take home from that judgment. Because it's that or one that is capable of actually putting paid to any subsequent or the likelihood of doing the same to these women and to any other woman or subsequently and in the future. Thank you very much. So those are the four things, basically.
But it's interesting that you say that, and Morajio, I'll come to you. I'll come to you with this question now. This raid wasn't an isolated incident. All over Nigeria, we hear about cases like this where authorities harass women in the name of enforcing laws against sex work, right? So, Morajio, how do you think this judgment will affect the way police and other law enforcement agencies treat women going forward, which is why I'm glad that Bamidele made the last point that he made. Mujirayo, you're muted.
Okay, yes, I'm back on. Okay, if I'm going to look at it from the perspective of generally what a judgment should do, I would say that in this circumstance, a judgment should be, you know, that kind of a judgment, a very laudable one, albeit a little bit short, because we had wanted the magistrate who had been going around with this same task force to prosecute this young innocent lady. We wanted that judgment to be given against her also. So it also sends the message to magistrates and judges alike, who are likely to fall into the same kind of circumstance.
Okay.
And so it also puts them on guard so that they don't, you know, go ahead to commit this kind of offenses. But ordinarily, when you get a judgment like that, you should be excited and be on the streets and throwing up flags and all, and saying, oh, yes, we've done it. This is going to really make a positive impact in every aspect of the Nigerian society. Now, you should know that when I've said that, when I've laid that kind of foundation, it means that there's going to be a but. Now, the but is, we have a very delicate, a very special Nigerian government. Now, we have a government that will come out in public, in text, and written and unwritten. and will say that we are committed to fighting gender-based violence. We are committed to protecting women on one hand. And then you would have still have the same government. It's the same government in the same country allowing the continuous breach of women's rights. In the form of, for instance, I am living in Kano State, for instance, and I don't have a covering over my head and I'm wearing a miniskirt. And there's some people who have called themselves moral police, ISBA, carries on their whip, and then they whip me and say, go inside the house, you shouldn't be dressed like this. So you see, there's a controversy. There is a contradiction. So if you think, or if we are thinking that this judgment is going to have a wide range of effect on Nigeria, then we should rethink it, because until we have a constitution that recognizes the rights of women, that separates the age of what a child is a child from when a child is a woman from the constitution realizing that first, then we know that Nigeria is committed to protecting the rights of women. Now, why do I say that? Section 29(4)(b) of the Nigerian Constitution says a girl is a woman. Instead of following the same general rule that a girl becomes a woman at all, everyone becomes an adult at 18. Now, it says a girl becomes an adult once she is married. So now we have a very conflicting and contradicting law that is in the Constitution, the grunum, the first, the law that, of course, allegedly it was made by we, the people of Nigeria. So now you see there's a problem. And until that problem is resolved, then we know that, oh, yes, when we come out with such judgments like this, we know that the Nigerian government is likely, now I'm not going to say with assurance that it will, is likely to protect the rights of other girls in every region in Nigeria. Meaning, we shouldn't be hearing that a 12-year-old is legally married. It is wrong. It is not even legal in the first place. Because the Child Rights Act that I know and I have says that a child is not yet an adult. It is not of a marriageable age unless she's 18 and above. And so we have jurisprudence to that effect. We've had jurisprudence in Nigeria even before the 1999 Constitution came into place, which says that if a lady is not 18, she's not yet an adult. So imagine we've had all this even before the Constitution was made. And then we see it being violated every single day, every single hour.
So you don't have a lot of hope.
If I'm going to be rejoicing that, oh, we got this judgment, I only be rejoicing that we got this judgment because it reinstates what ordinarily should be. It will state the fact that the Constitution is still supreme. It will state the fact that every woman in Nigeria is equal in status, is equal in every form with her male counterpart.
Let's leave it at that. Unfortunately, we're out of time. But I thank you all for joining us here. I know I hate it more than you do. We need to take a commercial break. But when we come back, Lagos will bring you our business segment, Balogun and Broad. I've had Mojiraya here, Bamidele Jacobs here, Dorothy Njemanze. Thank you for the work that you do.
Thank you.